This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
So we talked about the stock market. Kind of a wild day. It was up on some rumors that the tariffs would be paused, and then it was down. It was way down, but then it didn't finish super way down. Down 349. The NASDAQ was up. Here's President Trump.
Would you be open to a pause in tariffs to allow for negotiations?
Well, we're not looking at that. We have many countries that are coming to negotiate deals with us, and they're going to be fair deals, and in certain cases they're going to be paying substantial tariffs. There'll be fair deals.
The president also says, stop being weak and stupid. Don't be a panickin. He says the United States has a chance to do something that should have been done decades ago. Don't be a panickin. A new party based on weak and stupid people. That's what he said. Our friend Batyankar Sargon is back with us. She writes at the Free Press. She's got a book called Bad News, How Woke Media is Undermining Democracy. Her new book is called Second Class, How the Elites Betrayed Americans, Working Men and Women. And she might be the hottest person in media right now, drawing all kinds of attention. How are you, Bachi, this afternoon? You are on fire. Fred and I both agreed last week. En fuego. No doubt about it.
Mark, are you a panickin?
I will say that I have been a little bit of a panickin, if I have to admit to the audience. They heard some of this, and I just, some of it is hard to understand. Some of it's hard to digest. Some of it's just, you know, keeping myself from looking at the 401k, but a bit of a panickin. I'll just put myself into the small panickin category.
Lowercase panickin.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, I think some of this, let me sum it up this way, because I did have someone that, you know, texted me and, you know, not a super partisan type of person that just said basically, this was the message. Not trying to sound like a pessimist or, I guess, a panickin, and maybe because I'm not paying as much attention with the news, but Trump said before he got elected that prices would go down on goods, and if anything, it seems like these tariffs he's imposing are just pissing them off more and prices are going up. What's the deal? And that's kind of a representative text from a lot of Americans right now. I think they'd say some of the same things. My advice would be, okay, you need a little patience, right?
You know, there's a really big difference between like the price of eggs or beef or chicken going up and the price of like an iPhone going up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we act like everything is the same, but it's not the same. We actually produce the vast majority of the food that we make here, and gas prices are going down. So, you know, the elites have gotten very used to being able to order a new flat screen TV every year. And I would argue that regular people have gotten used to having to order, you know, a new washing machine every 5 years because they break. But, you know, my grandparents had their refrigerator for the entire lifespan that I knew them.
These things are true. You know this. If you've had any kind of appliance repairman in your home in the last 10 to 15 years, they'll tell you exactly what it's like. They, you know, these things would last forever, and they just simply don't anymore.
Exactly, because they used to be made here by American workers, and consumers are very nimble. The people who are not nimble are the people at the top who are like wildly wealthy. I mean, that's the other thing that's so frustrating about this is like, you know, yeah, there are some Americans who are middle class who are worried about their 401ks. I would tell them just to wait, you know, like just wait it out because it is going to get better. Like it's definitely going to get better. But a lot of the rage and anger is coming from gazillionaires who are losing a lot of money. But let's be honest, they'll never be poor. In fact, they'll never not be rich. They just cannot stand that there is a president in office who is not on his knees calling them and asking them what he's allowed to do, because that has been the norm in this country for the last 60 years as our economy became an upward funnel of wealth from the hardest working Americans, the middle class and the working class, into the pockets of the asset rich, people who own stocks and who own real estate. And I mean, that's the whole story here is Trump is saying he took on the entire international global economic world order and said, sorry, your fleecing of the American working class is over. It ends here. I mean, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen in my life. I wouldn't, if you told me this was going to happen a month ago, I wouldn't have believed you.
And you would also, I know you lectured some folks last week. Look, if you voted for economic change, it's not like he didn't promise these things, right?
Yeah, he talked about tariffs at every single rally that he went to. I mean, he's like, nothing is not consistent, you know? And yeah, there are a bunch of people like Elon Musk who got on the train for other things that they liked. Trump is not in the pocket of the oligarchs. And I really hope that Liberation Day can put finally to rest the myth that Donald Trump exists to service rich people like himself, because that's who's howling the loudest. And the Democrats know this. They know this because you know how you know they know this? They will not admit why he's doing it. It's the why. You will never hear a Democrat say he's doing it because X. And the reason is because the reason he's doing it is because he is actually doing what they have been pretending that they stand for the last 40 years, which is the working class. They don't. This is what standing for the working class looks like.
Isn't it amazing how out of touch they have become when it comes to the working class? Look, someone like you, you've been talking about this for years now, but even in the aftermath of the election, I guess I would have assumed that there would be a little bit more attention to what happened and the real causes of what, you know, put Trump into office maybe both times. But they're so out of touch with where their base used to be.
So out of touch. So out of touch. And this is why they really hate him, because Donald Trump purloined their entire working class base by simply doing what they used to do. Like, it's not rocket science, you know? Working class Americans are deeply tolerant. They're social moderates. They want an America first foreign policy. They're anti-war, and they want an economy that delivers for everybody. And I will just say to people who are freaking out about this, like, it's so wrong, because it's not like he's only doing tariffs and controlling the border. He's also doing a whole bunch of stuff designed for the business community, right? Deregulation, drill, baby, drill, dropping the corporate tax rates, tax cuts. Like, he's combining this intense protectionism of the working class with all of these pro-business goodies. Like, just wait a minute. Just let the man do the thing. And they won't. They won't wait,
yeah.
Because
well,
they
this is a great point.
Stand that regular people are going to benefit as well as them. They can't stand it. It has to be only them.
Well, I agree with you that a lot of that is going on right now. But let me ask this question, because I'm curious about your answer. Look, I've been talking about the manufacturing base in this country disappearing for a long time, and it's been really kind of disappearing since the 1960s when I was born. So I understand the goals here. I think a lot of people are frustrated by what's happened to our economy. But if we're being honest, I think you would agree, we're not going to rebuild the manufacturing base in this country over the course of just a couple of years. I mean, it literally may take decades. And then even then, I just wonder how much of those products that we used to make here can actually be made here, given the fact that we're all kind of conditioned to buy cheap stuff at Walmart, etc.
I don't know. I think that those habits can change really quickly. I mean, we all know that we're buying too much crap from China on Amazon. Like, we all know that. Like, there are certain things you can't live without that you actually need. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff that you don't actually need. You know what you need? A house. And you know how you get working class people to own houses is by reshoring manufacturing and giving them good jobs in steel and aluminum and lumber and microchips and pharmaceuticals. All of that manufacturing is still being done is just being done in other countries for slave wages. And the idea that we should just accept that because we've gotten used to it, I think that's crazy. We would never say that about the open border. Well, we got used to having all these illegals around to do, like, you know, low-wage labor, so we can never close the border because, my God, like, who's going to clean hotel rooms in New York City? We would never accept that logic that because a mistake was made, therefore we can never reverse it. And what's so frustrating, Mark, is we all agree about what the mistake was. It was offshoring of manufacturing.
Yeah, well, that's true. By the way, you kind of walked me into our favorite soundbite from after the election. This was on CNN. Sue and I love this.
I can't wait until American women can't get blueberries for their smoothies.
That was an actual person. We didn't even manipulate the voice, Batya. I don't know who she was, but wow. That was, you know, that was one of the panic moments when it came to the border. Oh, we're going to close the border. And by the way, wasn't it a miracle that that thing was shut down? I mean, even the LA Times had to admit last week that there's nobody coming across some of these sectors where we had thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions crossing before. And he did it without having this bill that was supposedly needed to be passed last year, right?
There's not a single industry in America that is done by a majority illegal migrant labor, and that includes agriculture. The majority of people, it's a slim majority, 52% of people working in agriculture are American citizens, okay? So every time some leftist says, but who's going to pick the crops and who's going to clean the toilets, or what Jasmine Crockett said the other day, you don't want your kids to go into hospitality. They are insulting millions of Americans. It's disgusting. And it's millions of Americans who are working much harder than them, but yeah, can't afford to buy a home because rich elites with their quote unquote expertise created an economy in which they would have a fraction of the competition in the housing market because working class people can no longer afford to compete. That is the whole story right there.
Yeah, it's awful, too. And, you know, one of the things, maybe one of the benefits here, especially if we do slip a little bit more into a recession, is interest rates are going to come down. So that might be a little bit easier for folks to get into the home market, but that's still going to be a challenge with supply and demand.
And you just have to, I agree with you, that's a really good point. But I mean, can we just stop and admire, like, the courage here of the president actually, like, we can all agree why he's doing it, right? There's only one reason he's doing it. He thinks it will make working class people richer. That's the only explanation for why he's doing it. Like, I just the idea that a president, a Republican, would take on the rich elites and say, it's time for your neighbors to see a little of the prosperity that you've been hoarding. I just think that is, like, the most admirable thing I've ever seen.
But you would also, you'd have to admit, look, I don't know. I think people, and you know that this is an instant disadvantage because the legacy media is not going to give him any credit whatsoever. But, you know, as things start to unfurl, and I don't know, maybe things turn in the other direction, then they're going to be really challenged. But if you have the economy dipping, if things are going in a negative direction, they're going to beat the crap out of him. It's going to all be Trump's fault, everything that happens in the economy from here on out.
Yeah, but I think he can take it. I mean, there's no way in my mind that Trump leaves office and the economy is worse off than when he inherited. He will not accept that.
Yeah,
and this
I agree.
Is a person who just comes up with solutions, right? He'll find another way. He's not going to allow that to happen. Like, yeah, if the tariffs don't work in a year, he'll get rid of them and try something else.
Well, I kind of agree with that, that, you know, this isn't a guy that wants to leave the White House with a legacy that did anything but strengthen the American economy. So I'm with you on that, and I hope that's true. It's just a matter of one of the difficulties here, Batya, is I think it's just so difficult to understand everything, and these tariffs are so complicated. One of the issues that I flagged earlier, and I don't know what the answer is for this, but when we say reciprocal tariffs, there a lot of these, they don't look reciprocal. They look like we're charging more than they are at this point. Now, some of that maybe is a situation that needs to be worked out, but that's where some of the math gets funky to me.
Okay, I don't like predicting because I'm often wrong about things, but here's my prediction about that. This is the Peter Navarro addition to it. I think before Trump never really talked about, I think throughout Trump's life, he didn't really believe the debt ceiling was real. He doesn't really believe that it's real as a businessman. I think he thinks it's sort of a silly thing to worry about. But I think Peter Navarro started to tell him, look, you can use the tariffs to generate revenue and that will close the deficit. And I think he's using that to get through the reconciliation bill and to get on the other side of that tax cut, at which point, like, he will stop using that rationale specifically and go back to sort of the idea that we should have just a fairer tariff. That's
I think you're right about
prediction.
That. Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, if this somehow works where you reduce the deficit and this is the revenue that is coming in, well, that's historic.
Right.
We'll see. Keep on them, Batya. Keep on them. All right?
I will. God bless you. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you. She's great. On fire. And she's, you know, being consistent, which a lot of other people, including the panicking at the microphone, might not be. This is interesting, just before we get to some city stuff, because the mayor's race is coming up tomorrow. And the comptroller, Jeff Rainford, who was on the roundtable last week, is going to join us for a little bit of a takedown. We're going to talk about the future of the city and what that really might hold with Kara Spencer as well. But this was in the Federalist over the weekend, and I kind of addressed this issue maybe not last week, but the week before, because a lot of us think to ourselves, you know, and I can put myself in this position, the people that are being most hateful right now are the people on the left. Look what they're doing to even Tesla owners that may or may not. You have Tesla owners out there that probably hate Elon Musk. They probably hate Donald Trump, right? Mm-hmm. But they're being attacked as Nazis because they happen to purchase a vehicle from one of the most successful American companies maybe in history. But the Federalist kind of reported this, that there was a report that was produced by something called the Network of Contagion Research, NCRI, which is kind of an interesting name. And they did this with Rutgers University. And they found that broader, what they referred to as assassination culture, appears to be emerging within segments of the U.S. public, not on the right, on the extreme left, which is kind of funny because, you know, they wanted to tell us for years that the biggest threat in this country was white supremacists. Well, apparently it is. It's white supremacist lefties who hate Donald Trump, and they really, I think they hate this country as well. But what they're saying in this study is less than a year after, like, real assassination attempts on Trump, there's a lot of people on the left that say, you know what, it's okay if Trump's taken out. And what they say in the study is these attitudes are not fringe. They reflect an emergent assassination culture grounded in a far-left authoritarianism and increasingly normalized in digital discourse. The report is called Assassination Culture, How Burning Teslas and Killing Billionaires Became a Meme Aesthetic for Political Violence. Jeez. Now, to me, Sue, this would be the type of story that the LA Times should cover, that the New York Times should cover, that the Washington Post should cover. They should put their lefties into sharp focus here. But they're not doing that story. It's the Federalist, right? So it's not a situation where this is even going to get a lot of coverage. They note there's a lot of things that I didn't know this. Do you know that they have a ballot measure that is named in California? Here, oh my gosh, I can't. It's named the Luigi Mangione Access to Healthcare Act.
I can't even.
Are you kidding me? So lawmakers in California thought it was a good idea to name a health care act after an assassin, right?
That's great.
That's awesome. On Friday, a California man, I don't know if we talked about this. I saw the video, though. He was angry with pharmacies. This, I think, was the week before. Was arrested on charges of murdering a Walgreens employee just days after the Luigi Mangione Act was filed with the state of California. Eric Velasquez, the victim, was not a pharmacist, and it was a respected husband and father of two. And this guy goes in. Did you see the video for this one?
It didn't.
He goes into the Walgreens. He kind of waves at the camera when he's going in. He goes and kills the dude, comes back, basically takes a victory lamp, shoots the camera out. So then, you know, the camera's dead. But some of the numbers that are in this particular study are more than a little troubling. Murder justification, 31% and 38% of respondents stated that it would be at least somewhat justified to murder Elon Musk and President Trump. The effects were largely driven by respondents that self-identified as left of center, with 48 and 55% at least being somewhat justifying, or at least somewhat justifying, murder for Elon Musk and President Trump, respectively, indicating significantly higher justification for violence against these figures. Property discretion. This shouldn't surprise you, because we've seen what's happened here and in Minneapolis, et cetera. 40% of the respondents, 39.8, stated that it is at least somewhat acceptable to destroy a Tesla dealership in protest.
Come on.
That's 40%. If our side had 40 to 50% that were cheering on violence, look, you can even look at January 6th. A lot of people on the Republican side aren't justifying that at all, including me. 40% of lefties think it's okay to destroy a car dealership in protest. Psychological, ideological correlations with the assassination culture. These beliefs, according to the report, are highly correlated with another, as well as with the justification of murder of, you know, the United Healthcare CFO. This suggests that support for violence is part of a broader assassination culture underpinned by psychological and ideological factors. Now, a lot of these times you would find that some of these studies are blah, 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 blah. But my goodness, you know, they looked in here. They found that users are increasingly tying the memification of Mangione with calls for political violence against Trump and Elon Musk. They say that that reflects the growing cyber social presence of assassination culture. I mean, if we're being honest, there's a lot of people out there that have no hesitation whatsoever encouraging death and destruction on Trump and Elon Musk. And it's quite stunning. But again, in a fair media world, you'd have other outlets outside of the Federalist reporting on this horror.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The local paper, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, did a piece on the mayor's race today, and they had a quote in there from Mayor Jones from a couple of weeks ago where she said, "Can you imagine being held to such a high standard that you're never allowed to make an error, to mess up, that you're never allowed to pivot and do something differently?" Sorry, it's a little hard for me to even read this without laughing hysterically. "When you discover something isn't working, well, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the existence of a black woman mayor." I mean, she didn't only pull the woman card, she played the race card and the woman card there, which you're going to probably hear a lot of tomorrow night. Jeff Rainford is back with us from Rainford and Associates, former chief of staff to Mayor Slay, knows the city very well. We'll get a preview of the election tomorrow. Jeff, how are you this evening?
Mark, I'm great. Good evening.
We had a prediction last week. I mentioned this on the roundtable that somebody, I won't say who was, somebody we were out with made the prediction that things won't go well for Tashar tomorrow night when she loses. And the quote that I liked was, "The wig's going to come off, Jeff." So I don't know what your opinion of how she'll accept this defeat will be, but let's just kind of talk about the math here, because there's no guarantee she's going to lose, but the numbers that we saw in the primary would indicate that she might get blown out.
Yes, she got beat by more than 30 points in the primary. The last poll by most scout, I think, still had her in the mid-30s. I've been watching the early voting. About 13,000 people have voted early in the city. That's a little bit more than in March. But 40% of the people who voted early voted at the Booter Library, which is down in St. Louis Hills. That's the area where the mayor came in fourth place in the primary. And in the two libraries in North St. Louis where she came in first place, only about 8% of the early vote came from those two libraries. So the early voting trend, now we don't know how those people voted, but the early voting trend does not bode well for her either.
But the folks who want to go out, and I think this was mentioned during the primary, that really want to cast these ballots, those are probably people more motivated by change typically, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would be more motivated by change. I think that we're seeing that not only in the mayor's race, but the comptroller, who's never even had to break a sweat, is probably a slight underdog for tomorrow. And I would not be surprised if two or three aldermen, about half of the board of aldermen are up for reelection. Wouldn't surprise me if two or three of the incumbents go down there. This is definitely the voters in the city of St. Louis who are paying attention to things when change. And this could be, you know, the early vote or the primary vote was bad for the incumbents. I would assume tomorrow will be more of the same.
So on the comptroller's race, let's talk about that. Donna, obviously a good friend of the show. She's also a Reardon Roundtable participant. Used to be a, you know, board member, was a state rep, and now she's going against Darlene Green. She wins this race, but barely in the primary. They still have to face off again because that's the way the nonsense system works. But her race, not as easy to call because it was so close the first time, right?
Right. It was 44-42 for Donna Behringer. As you said, state rep from St. Louis Hills against the longtime incumbent Darlene Green. But when you're an incumbent for, you know, 20 years, people know who you are. And when people actually vote and only 42% vote for you, it's like, okay, why, if people have known you for 20 years and they didn't vote for you in March, are they going to turn around and vote for you in April? Now, you know, there could be people who vote in April who didn't vote in March, so we don't know for sure. The biggest factor, I think, in a close race there is Donna Behringer. Nobody will ever outwork her. A friend of mine was down at the Carpenter Library Saturday for early voting, and Donna was out in the rain at the Carpenter voter greeting people as they came into the library.
She's working hard. There's no doubt about it. Well, you and I had a dinner, kind of an off-the-record dinner last week with some folks, and we were talking about Kara and the future and what might happen in the city of St. Louis. But let's kind of talk about the economic future, because it's not strong. We have a lot of issues with crime. We talked about whether or not is Kara the person to lead us into something a lot better. But outside of who that person is and who the mayor actually is, the economic challenges for this city are very real, Jeff. And a lot of us, when we were talking about this last week, didn't really see anything positive that might be coming down the future to really turn this around.
Well, she's got to, you know, listen, let me just say this about the incoming mayor. I think we all ought to support her, and even people who didn't vote for her should give her a chance, because she's going to be the mayor at a time where she's going to be left with a city that is in distress. And you mentioned the city's economy. The city has been losing population, and it picked up the loss of population, even more population under Mayor Jones, been losing jobs, been losing, economic wealth. And, you know, the city has not had a budget problem, largely because it got $500 million in ARPA money and because they haven't been able to fill vacant jobs. So they've been running slight surpluses. But that's going to come to a grinding halt in the next 2 or 3 years. We're watching the stock market just go down over the last 3 days. You know, the city has 3 pension funds, and when the stock market loses 10% of its value, that's many millions of dollars that the city's going to have to make up in pension costs. So to me, there's only 2 ways that this comes back. Number one is, and Alderman Spencer has been hitting the nail on the head, you got to restore city services. It starts with public safety, but it's also streets. It's also refuse. It's all the things that they have to do. So when people live in the city, they feel safe and they feel like the city government is paying attention to them. And you don't have things like I feel like if I go out at 11 o'clock at night and get on the highway, there are people going 80, 90 miles an hour. And I just don't feel safe. Those are the kinds of things that got to get a handle on. And then the second thing is they're going to have to grow the city's economy. They got to get convince people to move back into the city, employers to move back into the city. We need more tourists. We need more people from the suburbs coming into the city, you know, for all the fun things there are to do. And that's easier said than done. But, you know, that's the 1-2 punch. You got to restore city services for the residents and you got to grow the economy. It's the only chance. They will not be able to do tax increases to paper over what's coming up. They're going to have to grow the city's economy or it's going to get even worse.
Now, look, I think the first part of that is not too hard. You just have to be paying attention, use some common sense. You can, you know, hire better people, not DEI hires in the street department, et cetera. The second part of that is where it gets really tough, especially when you have a Cardinals team that looks like they may already be on the road to falling apart. You have challenges down at Ballpark Village on off game nights to begin with. You got a Topgolf that's bleeding money off of Shoto. So I don't know how, you know, and then maybe an economy that's tanking at the same time. Those are big challenges.
You know, they are big challenges, and that's why I don't think there should be an expectation that the mayor can deliver on City Hall. She should be able to run City Hall, deliver good city services, have a high-quality police department. We'll have state control. That's another issue. But have a high-quality police department, fire department. You know, when you dial 911, somebody actually answers the phone and they send an ambulance or a police officer when you need it. When there's snow on the ground, they plow it. When the trash is in the dumpsters, they empty it. She's got to be held accountable for all that. The rest of it she cannot do by herself. She cannot, you know, there's no magic to create a strong economy after, you know, this one is, you know, just gone down, down, down since COVID, particularly downtown. And there's a lot of things that need to happen. We used to be, you know, all the fun stuff in the region, the funnest stuff in the region was in the city. Now we've got competition, you know, streets of St. Charles, the new stuff in Chesterfield and other places. And, you know, the business community is going to have to pitch in, you know, the 270,000 of us who still live in the city are going to have to pitch in. But, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. And one person, not even the mayor, can do it alone. You know, one thing I hope happens is that she inspires everybody from the business community to labor to everybody that, you know, St. Louis is, you know, a big part of the region and we can't have a strong region without a strong city. And as Buzz Westfall once said, downtown St. Louis is his downtown, that the suburbs understand that if downtown looks the way it is today, you know, the entire region's reputation suffers because of it. And that, yep, we all, you know, she inspires us. She allows people to come in and help. And we all come in and we figure it out. And it's a longer conversation on, you know, tactically what we do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of us to get involved.
Look, we have the Frozen Four in town this week. It's an amazing event that we're hosting at Enterprise Center. And you come back downtown in the next week, you're going to see gates around City Hall, around the courts building, around the park across the street. That's been there for a year and a half. I've often used that as my symbol for, you know, what's happened in this city under this mayor. The other thing that you and I have talked about this a lot, if you go back to Mayor Slay's administration, when you were chief of staff, we talked a lot more about getting rid of the earnings tax. How big of a component is getting rid of the earnings tax, which seemingly has become an impossible task?
I think it's a very big part of it. I think the challenge is that nobody wants to take on, you know, what happens if you, like, you know, if you just got rid of it by 0.1% per year for 10 years. The question, of course, is how do you pay your police officers and firefighters? Because it would be a Pyrrhic victory if you had favorable tax policy, but you know, public safety went down the tubes. So part of the issue is the city's going to have to figure out for a lot of reasons, but one of them is they can't, you know, their tax structure is oppressive in the city. They've got to figure out how to get their costs under control without hurting public safety. So it's probably going to be, you know, new ways of doing things. You know, maybe they'll have to, you know, privatize trash. They may have to, you know, look at crazy things like combining police departments with St. Louis County, those sorts of things. But yes, you've got to take a look at not only your tax policy, which is the earnings tax, does damage the city. But you also have to look at the regulations, the business regulations. You know, you have to look at what does it cost to do, you know, what is the red tape, and does the red tape drive businesses out of the city? And one of the ideas that has been kicked around and that I really like that we kind of had talked about at the end of the Slay administration on the earnings tax is what if you pick three areas of the city that are, you know, really doing poorly but have, you know, have some things going for them, like in North St. Louis around NGA. And you said in those areas, you know, there, you move into the city or you have businesses in that area, you don't have to pay the earnings tax, you don't have to pay the income tax, and we're going to make sure you feel safe. And you know, you do something aggressive like that. Now, I don't know, Mark, if that's the answer or if what I'm talking about are the answers, but it's going to have to be things that are way outside the box like that. We're not going to, this is not going to work if we just keep, you know, trying to nibble along the edges and you know, instead of 270,000 people 4 years from now, we're at 240,000 and we have, you know, we just slow the death spiral. I mean, we are going to have to do some big things and think outside the box. And, you know, I there's an old fashioned saying in politics, don't let a good crisis go to waste. What that means is that there are things that people would not want to do, but they're willing to do them when you're in a crisis. Well, our city is in a crisis.
I think you said it well there, Jeff Renford. We'll see what happens tomorrow. I appreciate your insight tonight.
Anytime, Mark. Always love being on your show.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. We're coming back. We got audio cut of the day for this Monday on deck. By far my favorite song right now. And I can't believe I missed it. It was out 6 months ago, Jack White. When it's cold outside. It rocks. We're going to rock a little harder at the end of this hour than we usually do, Sue. I'm just going to make a mention of that to prepare the audience. But there's such great guitar work in this. I couldn't resist. We do have audio cut of the day coming up here. Get out and vote tomorrow, though.
Yes.
If you are a city resident, this is so important. And Donna Behringer, really, her race in particular, which really plays a huge role. People don't understand how big of a role the comptroller is because they're on the board that decides where the money is being spent.
That
right?
is correct. She's one of the top. That's one of the top three positions in the city.
Right, right. So, and Darlene Green has had that for years. I am a little bit more nervous about this just because it was so close the first time. But you got to turn out and vote. A lot of people have early voted. I do think that that favors the challengers, not the incumbents. But, you know, turnout's weird, and it's a turnout game. So Tashara's team is going to do their best to bring in the Brandon Johnson reporters and all that nonsense. Supporters, not reporters. That's what they're trying.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, well, Trump calls them, what are they called now, the Panikins? Calls them the Panikins.
Oh, that's
funny. Don't be a Panikin. That's, I think he's talking to me. Don't be a Panikin. That's what people are doing right now. But here's Brian Brenberg from Fox Business on what's happening with the tariffs.
You've had all this selling in the market, but as soon as investors got the whiff of a rumor that you might get a pause, all of a sudden they were feeling bullish again. Okay. So what it tells me is you've got a lot of negative sentiment among investors on these tariffs. But I don't know if it's that deep. They're expecting this president to cut a deal. And as soon as they thought he did, it soared. So, you know, if I'm the president of the United States and I see that, I'm thinking, okay, I hold a lot of cards, maybe even more now than I thought. But also, I can do a lot in the markets with some deal making here. This is the biggest invitation to deal making.
So this is a very important point that Brian is making, because for those of us who are paying attention, and maybe you thought you were dreaming, because honestly, I thought I was dreaming. I look at the market a little after 9 o'clock this morning. It's up 500 points. It's in green. I'm like, wait, that can't be. I just saw the Dow futures last night. It said 1500 down. But there was a rumor that he was going to put a pause on it. It was a false rumor. It was fake news. But just on that rumor, the markets flipped so quickly. And the Nasdaq was actually up today. But Brenberg's point is, look, there's a lot of countries lining up right now.
They're doing exactly what you would want to happen if you're in a negotiation with them. Now, it doesn't happen overnight, but it's a very, very good sign. More countries are talking like they would negotiate than get into a trade war. And I think that's really important.
Don't be a panickin. That's what I'm saying. Don't be a panickin. I have to tell myself, don't be a panickin. And then, you know, we're getting closer to Easter. It's still a couple of weeks away. But there was a debate on CNN with our dear friend Scott Jennings. And I'm going to have to take the side of Jennings on this one. They were talking about things that really should not be in existence. His point was human-sized Easter bunnies should be banned.
The limit. Okay.
Scott Jennings.
Major problem. Human-sized Easter bunnies.
Yeah.
It is the season. And look, I think if you want, they're demonic.
And
I know parents like to have their children photographed with these human-sized demonic Easter bunnies. I counsel against it. If you want to show them a regular-sized rabbit, fine. The Cadbury bunny is fine, and I'll even make an exemption for Playboy bunnies. But human-sized Easter bunnies, out. They're right out.
They're terrifying.
Terrible. You only have 2 weeks to make your plans. Easter's coming. Eliminate this from your photo regimen. Do not traumatize your children.
Absolutely no Playboy bunnies. Okay, I am sorry, but that is out. We're out.
I said
I like the compromise. But by the way, I have a picture. Ethan's put it up on the Twitter feed on YouTube right now as well of Alexa when she was 1 year old on a human-sized Easter bunny's lap, and it is horrifying. You can see her screaming. It's actually one of the funnest pictures, one of the funniest pictures
That's
I've ever
awesome.
Taken. So you should check that out. But I would have some solidarity here. Look, my wife has a fear, and it's a very real fear and dislike of clowns. And I'm kind of like, clowns are kind of creepy. I don't know. There's
it's
something
kind of
about
on
clowns
the border
that are creepy.
Then, isn't it? A person dressed as a giant rabbit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird.
A lot of people have the clown thing.
Yeah, I think so, too. Well, because, again, nothing against Fizbo. They're from Modern Family. But even Fizbo might have been a little weird and a little odd. But there you go. Scott Jennings as our audio cut of the day. I think he might be with us, by the way, tomorrow, gracing us with
his
presence. He's a national treasure, ladies and gentlemen. I know he has a lot to say about the Cardinals as well. But have a great night, Sue Thomas.
You too.
This is Monday night. That means that Sue and her dear friend walk Forest Park.
Yes.
Now, you rarely, if ever, skip that, right?
Yes.
You've done it when the weather crap.
Yes.
You get the benefit of nice weather tonight.
Yay!
Beautiful. Enjoy the walk. Because this song rocks so much, and because I love it so much, I'm going to let it play out a little bit more than I usually do, and let the end of this Jack White song go on. If you don't like rock and roll, if you don't like good guitar riffs, you might want to turn it off. But we'll talk at 3 tomorrow.
And when I'm feeling this way.
Get more at 971talk.com.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.